analytics are massively important, I think influential and helpful in that space.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Colton Houston, the co-founder of HDI Intelligence. Colton spent 9 years on staff at Alabama in various roles, gaining valuable experience inside a high-level program before transitioning into the analytics space. Today, he works with teams through HDI Intelligence to help coaches better understand the game using data and analytics. In this episode, we discuss which analytics Colton believes matter most for teams, common mistakes programs make when trying to use data, and how analytics can help coaches design more efficient practices. It's a practical conversation with real takeaways for coaches at every level. Please welcome to the podcast, Colton Houston. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches. Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. On the podcast today, happy to be able to have the opportunity, co-founder over at HDI Intelligence, ladies and gentlemen, Colton Houston. Colton, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, Doug, Alan, thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, thank you.
So the first thing I want to make sure to reference, and I know in the introduction that we have pre-recorded, it was already done, and it does mention your background a little bit. But that being said, just to touch on it, you have a great background for coaching. I know you have built your way up, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that would love to hear the basketball side of how you built your way up into one program over at Alabama. I know you were there for 9 years of various roles, operations, intern, office assistant, ultimately be the Dobo. So that's a whole side of story that I'd like to touch on just briefly, but then I'll also dive into the HDI side of things as well, which is huge. But first things first, the basketball side, right? There's a lot of people who would love to just do whatever they could to be on a staff like a premier school like Alabama, to be able to have the opportunity to be the director of basketball operations. From the coaching side, thinking back on the experiences you've had there, just talk about what it was like and growing in a program, one, nonetheless, being such a premier program in Alabama, but just growing in a program from being the operations coordinator to an intern, office assistant, and so on, back up to be on the staff. Talk about that experience and some things that you learned from the coaching side.
Yeah, happy to. I started at Alabama in 2010, which was Anthony Grant's second season. So that's who hired me and gave me my first opportunity in college basketball. And it's cool that Coach Grant is at Dayton now, as you all know, and having a lot of success. And they've been clients of HDI since day one. So I still get to have that relationship and work with them just in a slightly different capacity now. But, you know, probably like a lot of people who want to break into college basketball or have broken in, I didn't have a network. I didn't play at a high level. I hadn't coached or been a manager necessarily. So I'd coached a couple years of high school, but was really starting from scratch. And my hook, because I was a little bit older, I'd already gone to grad school. I was moving into my late 20s, and I was able to work camp at Alabama. I do find that working camps, most schools are still doing that. College athletics has changed a lot. I think most of these schools are still having basketball camps, and they're always looking for workers. So it's a good way to get your foot in the door. And when I had a chance to talk to the assistants at Alabama or the video coordinator and eventually Coach Grant, my pitch to him was, and I'd been given this advice by some people just who knew how tough it was to break in. They said, if you'll volunteer, make it hard for them to say no. And so that was my pitch to Coach Grant. Fortunately, I was married and I have a very supportive wife at the time. I was in a position to do that for maybe a year or two. I told him, Coach, I'll come work for you. I won't go to class because I already have a master's degree. So I'll just be up here in the office, do whatever you need me to do. You won't have to pay me a dime. And if 2 months in, you said you don't like me, you can just get rid of me. There's really no cost to you. So eventually he said, okay. And that was my first year as I don't know what they called me, an intern or something like that. And my whole goal was to try to develop some relationships, add some value, and eventually permanent spot. So that's how it started. And as you alluded to there, Doug, I think about a year and a half in, we had someone leave. And so I got bumped up into a operations coordinator role. And then that grew into a director of operations role. And what I thought would be 1 or 2 years ended up being 9 years and two.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm so glad you said that, man. I wear this hat for a reason. You can probably see the moniker on there, and it's like a silent reminder to our profession. And so people probably wonder, what the heck's he wearing that hat all the time? If they're listening, that's the reason why, because I think at times in coaching, we're all looking for that cheat code, right? Or what's the secret hack? And there isn't one. And if there is one, it's everything that you just said. It's being willing to, number one, take a shot, right? And not know maybe what's on the other side of it. It's what being willing to put yourself out there and have the boldness sometimes to ask for an opportunity and let some people know what you're trying to do. So if there are any hacks, it's those. But those hacks, you know, hacks are usually something like, if you do this, then you get that. Mm-hmm. And typically in coaching, it doesn't work that way. You have to be willing to play the long game and deal with some delayed gratification in this profession. There is no magic pill. But if there is one, it's being patient enough to build relationships. And by you throwing yourself out there like that, that's great to put that out there. And people listening are going to pull from that for sure.
I love the hat, first of all. I like to say there are no shortcuts, which is similar to concept. Second of all, I think that the other side of that story, which may be helpful for people to hear, is so I got this opportunity at Alabama, but I had to hear a lot of no's before I got a yes. And so there were two different Division III schools. Obviously, Alabama's at a different level, right? And we're talking D3, who I said, hey, I'll come be an assistant, volunteer, third assistant. And they said, no, we're full. So just because doors are closing here and here doesn't mean a door's not going to open somewhere else. It only takes one. It's not like I just walked in the first school I talked to said, yeah, come work for us. It happened to be Alabama, which ended up being a good thing. But yeah, there were others that weren't so easy.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you for sharing that too.
And I'm still surprised that Major didn't say anything about the camps. We always preach about people working camps, and I know a lot of schools don't do it as much now. There are definitely more than enough that go on, but it's a great way to be able to get in. And we preach it all the time. I've been fortunate to be able to help meet some people through camps, and it's definitely a good way to get your foot in the door. So there's another living moment right there for everybody for a reference that maybe some things didn't work out, but get into a camp, but some opportunities may present themselves. And I say may present themselves. But going off of that, so you worked early on in that career and in Alabama, in your previous roles with analytics a little bit. Talk about how that really just stemmed you into going into what you're doing now with HDI. Like, how did that really transition from working with athletics to now being full-time in athletics and using an organization and a corporation for it?
Yeah, happy to. Yeah, I didn't start at Alabama thinking I'll do this for a few years and then I'll help start an analytics company. I wanted, like everybody else, probably to coach. I'd coached a couple years of high school, loved coaching the game, loved being around the game. And so that was the goal. And so lucky enough, as I said before, to get a more permanent spot on staff. But the analytics piece came in organically and I would say gradually. I've always loved math and love school in general, but like to learn. But understood math, understood the numbers, and I don't want to go. I have a whole rant about sports numbers that I won't bore your listeners with right now, but we work in an industry that's very data driven. We keep score, there's numbers on the scoreboard, we get stat sheets at every timeout. Like, even coaches who say, when I'm not an analytics guy, I promise you, you're looking at that stat sheet every timeout and you're looking at turnovers, rebounds, whatever it is. So, numbers are very essential, it's central to basketball, right? I, like a lot of people, I read the book Moneyball when it came out. And I was like, this is amazing stuff. Oh, I was also so a baseball good fan. The movie is great, but I was into the book. I read that two or three times before I ever got to Alabama. And so then when I got to Alabama, honestly, I was looking for a way, and I mentioned this before, to add value to the staff and prove to these coaches I'm worth keeping around. And I just naturally gravitated to the analytics piece because, A, I like that stuff. And B, really no one else on staff was super into it. And I was like, here's a way I can maybe make my mark and help. So I started doing what I just called analytics scouting reports on upcoming opponents, using KenPom stats, using Hoop Math. I don't think that site's around anymore. A little bit of Synergy. Just trying to pull anything that was beyond what the traditional box score was they were looking at. And maybe here's some insights from that as we're scouting this opponent. And so our assistant coaches like that. I knew they liked it. This might have been my second or third year at Alabama, and I started doing these analytics scouting reports. And I knew that I was getting somewhere when one of the assistants came down. He had the next scout. And he's like, Colton, where's the scouting report? He wanted it. I was still working on it. He didn't have it yet. I was like, that's a good sign if he's asking for it. And then maybe by my third, fourth year, I can't exactly remember, Coach Grant started asking for those and looking at those. So just slowly carved out a little niche. I did a lot of other stuff that wasn't just analytics, but that was part of it. I enjoyed it. Coaches valued it. But I ended up learning a lot doing that, which was the thing I didn't realize at the time was how much I was going to learn about basketball analytics, how numbers and coaching really connect, which I know we're probably jumping ahead, but what we try to do at HDI is connect the numbers to the coaching, like the practical piece. So it really came about organically through that. I did have the idea two or three years in that, because this is, you know, early 2010s, mid 2010s, and the kind of analytics revolution is happening in the NBA, and there's a lot being written about it. You're hearing about the Warriors and the Rockets and the Spurs and teams that are super analytical and playing the game differently and how they have these departments internally, a bunch of people working. And I realized colleges weren't doing that, and so there probably was an opportunity for some third party to provide a service those schools could use. But I know I'm probably getting ahead of ourselves here with where HDI came from, but that's how my experience at Alabama happened. That's how analytics became kind of part of my role there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So you really just reading up on it and really implementing it yourself, bringing it to these coaches and saying, hey, this is something that's starting to evolve. I want to bring it to you guys. And then people just started collapsing on it. Like they feeling the need for it, feeling the usage out of it.
Yeah, I think every coach is looking for an edge, right? Coaches are big on preparation. If you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail, right? We've all heard that. I think it's very true. And I just think it was another dimension of their preparation, right? They're in there watching film. And I still think this is mostly true at the college level. Our film analysis stuff is really developed. We have really good software tools, full-time video coordinators. We have these edits waiting on the laptop to watch on the plane on the way home. Like the video side of things is pretty high level. The data side of things, which to me is the other side of the story. What does the film tell you, but what do the numbers tell you? The data, analytics, whatever you want to call it, side of the equation, certainly 10 years ago was behind the video side. I still think it's probably lagging behind. And so when you can show a coach, like, here's some numbers that maybe give you a more accurate, more precise idea of what this player does or what this team does, if they can see the value from a preparation standpoint, then they're gonna value that, right? So I think I was able to do that for our coaches at Alabama back then, and that's a lot of what we try to do at HDI now.
What I love about this is, like, the data actually, sometimes the data is information, but sometimes the data is confirmation. And that is, I use it for both, right? Like, I use it for information. I like to look at a cumulative stats is one of the first thing I look at, because if you just pull up someone's cumulative stats, it's almost like a storybook. Every team tells you a story about who they are, and you look at cumulative stats, and you start to look and you say, wait a minute, they've taken 1,000 shots on the season and 450 of those shots are threes. Oh, 45% of their shots are threes. So you can just start using the numbers to give you information. Then you watch it and you trust your eyes and what do your eyes tell you well. And then so you put all that together. So you have the information in your eyes and then you have the data. So it's like it's like a confirmation to everything as well. It's so supportive is what I love about it. And I don't know if anything is ever a solution completely in and of itself, but I do think it's an incredible tool that just adds to to figuring out the whole story.
Yes, completely agree with everything you just said. And one way I like to put it is the data is going to tell you, what does this team do, right? What are they good at? What are they not good at? The video is going to tell you how. So in your example Oh, they take a lot of threes. You and I know as coaches, all three of us, like, that can mean a lot of different things, right? That can be dribble drive. That can be Princeton style. That can be fast pace. That can be slow pace. That can be five out. The data is not necessarily going to tell you that. It's going to tell you what they do, video. And I like the order there, right? Each coach has his own process. But more often than not, what you said there, I think makes a lot of sense. You go to the data first to get a picture for what they do. Then I think your film study afterwards is more productive because you really know what to look for. And you said you can confirm or go a little deeper on some of that stuff.
So out of those numbers then that we're talking on, like the analytics, because I feel like a lot of times people might look at analytics and they see 1,000 different things, right? You can see shooting percentages, turnover, and especially depending on the site you go on, synergy, it breaks it down to everything, like catch and shoot, dribble, one dribble, pull-ups, left, whatever, finishing at the rim. There's so many analytics and numbers. which ones would you say are probably most useful for coaches? And I guess I'll ask two questions. One, which ones did you find, at least in your time in Alabama? Now, I know times have changed, more numbers have come out, things have completely evolved. Like, when you first were at Alabama implementing this, what numbers did you feel the coaches gravitated to the most to use? And has that changed, or are there more now?
Yeah, there are probably a few more than there used to be. That's a really good question, because I think what happens a lot is maybe coaches who aren't, don't have a background in analytics or haven't been exposed to it before, they jump into the deep end, and it can be overwhelming how much data there is. And like you said, Doug, like, I see this. What do I really need to focus in on?
What do you follow? About? Yeah.
When you're talking about a team, all right, to me, I like to look at the big picture and then let the pieces fall in underneath that, right? So from a team standpoint, what really matters is your offensive efficiency, right, which typically we express in points per possession, and your defensive efficiency. Since both teams are going to have roughly equal possessions in the game, if you can have a higher points per possession than your opponent, you're going to win the game. Pretty simple, right? And if you can have a significant margin in those two, you're going to win by a lot. All right, so then the question is, what stats most influence the points per possession number? And that's where some of your listeners probably have heard of the four factors. Those get talked about a lot in analytics. So quick shout out to Dean Oliver, who really sort of paved the way for basketball analytics. And then Ken Palm, the godfather of college basketball analytics, who's taken Dean's work and just done so much positive for our game with that. They both talk a lot about the four factors. They're on Ken Palm's site and a lot of other places. But the four factors are effective field goal percentage. It's basically how efficiently do you score from the field? And it takes twos and threes into account. Obviously, threes are worth more, right? Your turnover rate, how often do you turn it over? Your offensive rebound rate, how often do you get your rebounds back? And your free throw rate, how often do you get to the line? So those are the four stats, whether you're talking offense or defense, that directly influence or most influence your points per possession. I think once you get past that level, that second level analysis, the stats you should care about as a coach depend on your specific team and your style of play. So now we're talking about at the third level stats like pace of play, assist rate, right? You can have a good offense playing slow or fast. You can have a good defense speeding teams up, slowing teams down. Assist rate, similar, doesn't directly impact your efficiency, but stylistically, it might be really important to you as a coach if your identity is to play a certain way, right? And I've been in this position. I've been in this position back in the day at Alabama. We're in this position now at HDI when we start working with a new program like, you know, San Diego or whoever it happens to be. And we're in that meeting when we say, coach, high-level goals, offensive and defensive efficiency, right? This is how you want to really measure yourself at the highest level. But then beneath that, here are the stats you want to look at. And there's really four on each end. I think when you're looking at individual players, it's different, right? Because from a player standpoint, you're thinking about things slightly differently. So on the player end, I would say usage rate is big. Player efficiency is big, but everyone has a different way of measuring that. We have our own formula at HDI. Ken Palm has one, offensive rating. There's different ways to do that. I don't know that anyone's fully cornered the market on that. But then you look at their turnover rate, rebound rate on an individual level, right? Their shot selection, their shooting efficiencies. It's really what you're doing is you're taking the old box score, the player stat line and the box score, and you're substituting, I would say, some more accurate ways to evaluate performance for what was already there. So instead of just looking at a guy's rebounds per game, for example, you look at their rebound rate because, you know, it's a lot easier to get seven rebounds if you play 35 minutes versus 15 minutes, right? So just some, what I would say, common sense changes to make what you're looking at a little more accurate in terms of what you're trying to measure on the player side. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. That's so good.
Yeah, because a lot of it is ultimately tailored towards, other than the first four that you gave, right? Everything else is tailored towards your personal, the pace of play. If you're trying to be a team who walks it up the floor and runs more sets, isn't going to be the same as a team who's trying to get 50 or 40 possessions per game. No, it definitely, that's a great point. It definitely matters as to who or what team is trying to implement it. But then on the flip side, I'm sure there have been a lot of people who have tried to use analytics and maybe have used it wrong. Is there like a mistake that you have noticed programs use, coaches use, trying to use analytics where they're trying to be more of this, but they're definitely not using the analytics properly?
Yeah, it can be misused. Two common mistakes come to mind. And obviously with the teams we work with, we're definitely trying to steer them away from these mistakes, right? Number one is you make up your mind what you believe and you use the analytics as a justification you're not open to being, to learning new things or to changing your, you're wasting your time watching the video, right? Because you've already decided what you want to do. Analytics, the same thing. So a lack of openness there, or just using analytics to confirm what you already believe and want to do. The second thing would be almost on the other side of the coin, like thinking analytics is going to be the magic pill, right? I say the silver bullet, but I'll say the magic pill. Because
yeah.
It's going to solve all my problems, right? It's going to fix everything. And it is no, there is no silver bullet. There is no magic pill. It's perfect you wore that hat, because I was already thinking along these lines before we even hopped on. I think analytics can be a very powerful tool. It can help you win more games. It can help your team be better. But it's just like anything else. It is a tool that's part of a larger puzzle, right, to help your team have success. Yeah. I don't want to underestimate the impact we have. I think we can tremendously impact programs, and we actually track the data. I know it's hard for y'all to believe that. We track the data to see the impact we have, and teams typically win a couple more conference games when they work with us. But let's just be real. If you have a bad roster, if you have bad players, if you have a bunch of injuries, the best analytics in the world aren't going to help you go out and beat the team that's twice as talented.
No question.
So having a proper conception of what analytics can do and how it does, I think that's probably, if you miss it, that's probably the mistake we see most often.
It's funny, Colton, like analytics are like someone that dresses a certain way. And like the way you dress, like you have to know who you are, right? And if you know who you are, then you're going to dress in a way that fits who you are, right? Like I got right now hoodie, cap on, sweats. If I could wear this 365 days a year, I would do it if I could. But if you walk out the door right now in some platform shoes and bell bottoms and a leisure suit like the 1970s, but yet you want to exist in 2025, probably not the best idea, right? Like that's a poor decision in terms of, you got to know who you are.
Yeah.
And so I think the programs you guys probably had the most success with, they know exactly who they are.
That's, yes.
And philosophically, they like defensively, this is who we are. This is who we want to be. Offensively, this is who we want to be. So now those numbers are like wearing the right clothes. Okay, we can use this to fit who we are because we have an identity about ourselves.
100%. And I just want to take that point one step further. I think this is super important. You said the teams that get the most out of analytics, whether they're working with HDI or doing it on their own or whatever, are the ones who know exactly who they are, because now, you know, the analytics are in service of a larger mission and a larger purpose. And they're open to changing their opinion about how we want to guard this action or who's playing how many minutes right in our rotation. But the core of the identity of that team is set. But I want to take it one step further and say, because I do think this is a common misconception, that of a wide variety of playing styles and a wide variety of coaching styles can benefit from analytics. In fact, I'm a big believer that regardless of kind of what your style of play is or your philosophy as a coach, you can benefit from analytics. I think there is a somewhat common misconception out there that if you believe in analytics and you have to play a certain way, right? You have to play fast and take a million threes. That's what analytics is. And it can be. And we see it. We work with a lot of teams. And there's a lot of diversity in terms of how those teams play. And I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of analytically sound or analytically informed ways to play, right? Like you can have a great offense by being incredibly physical and tough and getting a ton of offensive rebounds, dominating at the rim, drawing a lot of fouls. Like that is a very analytically sound formula for being really good on offense. You can also be a really good offense by playing five out, by playing five shooters, by up in the pace, by taking a million threes. Like there are a lot of different, I would say, paths to success. Now, some paths we're going to say, coach, if your belief is that the 15-foot jumper is the best shot in basketball and we're going to take as many as possible, you know, unless your team's full of Kevin Durant and Chris Paul, that's analytically, we probably can't help you very much because it's going to be really hard to have a good offense that way. But I would say there's more philosophies that can work analytically than can't. And the same thing on defense. Yeah, I think, but the teams who know who they are going to get the most out of the numbers.
No, and I love too. So we actually, for a Division III program, we use analytics a nice amount. Now, obviously we don't have the financial situation that a lot of major programs do to be able to use a lot more in depth to be able to get more. But we look at our best five out there who are rebounding, right? This is your best five for rebounding. Okay, this is your best five defensively. And even going back to your point too, if you're a team who your best shooter is shooting 45, we'll say 45% from the left corner, and you're running all of your plays to the right corner for him, and he's shooting maybe 35%, it's okay. Why aren't you running him the other side? So it definitely gives you a lot more understanding, I will say, even for a small program like us. Again, we use it to a nice extent, but we don't hang our hats on it, but it's definitely one of those things where you take all of it into consideration, but you definitely put it all under a scope and say, okay, this is what it's showing. And who doesn't look over at the plus minuses? I know you said it too, at timeouts, at halftime, who doesn't look at the plus minuses and say, this kid is minus 20 right now in this half. Like, he is not doing good. We got to get somebody else in there. They're huge.
Yeah, dig into this, Colton, for a second, because, and talk about the plus minus thing for a minute, because that, do you agree that can be tricky?
Yes.
That from the standpoint of, it doesn't always reflect, a guy could maybe have a minus 12 for a game.
Yeah.
But while he was in the game, he actually maybe did some things that were pretty good. And so I think you know where I'm going with this. If you could pull on that a little bit more, because I think we have to be careful as coaches not to overload that last block in the stat sheet from a plus minus perspective.
I have an ambivalent relationship with plus minus, because on one hand, I like it causes coaches to think about player impact on the overall team success beyond just how many points they score, how turnovers they have. But I'll say this, plus minus from the traditional stats, the stats that show up in the box score, it's the most misinterpreted and misapplied stat there is. Wow. Because there's so much more that happens that determines team success. It's a team sport. There are 10 players on the floor, right? So not only does it matter, because you're looking at one player's plus minus, there are four other players on his team that are on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. And not every player plays with the same teammates. And there's five players on the opposing team that are on the floor, and that's going to change. And that doesn't even, that's just talking about who's on the floor at a given time. That doesn't even get into the randomness that can come in when, you know, hey, their best shooter, the other team's best shooter was out there when player A on our team was out there. We gave him three wide open looks from three and he missed them all. And plus minus might show up. Well, we did a good job defensively when this guy was out there. But you, as a coach, common sense, like, we just kind of got lucky he missed some shots, right? And I could go into other ways. Plus minus can be misleading and misused. You know, this, I think a lot of analytics people try to go a little deeper than just plus minus. We do something at ACI called player leverage, which accounts for the opponents. It accounts for shooting variance. We look at offense and defensive separately, and we do player combinations, and really in an attempt to cut through the noise. Plus minus, to use some data jargon, it's a very noisy stat, which basically means what you're trying to measure, which is player impact on the game. You know, that may be buried in that stat somewhere, but the noise is all the other stuff that you're not trying to measure that influences the stat.
Yeah.
And so the noisier a stat is, frankly, the less reliable it is, right? So we have seen coaches come to us and say, this guy's plus minus was terrible. We took him out. And you want to say this gently in a way it can be heard, but sometimes it's like, you shouldn't have done that. You know, influence the stat to a point where basically I agree with you on plus minus. I do think there are better ways to measure that.
Well, it's funny, noisy stats like that end up in noisy staff meetings because guys are arguing.
No doubt.
Guys are arguing about. Yo, man, no doubt. And especially if he recruited a kid, right?
That's no doubt.
Another, let's not get into that Pandora's box. But a guy recruits a guy and he's a plus 17, but yet it's a blowout game. And sure. There are a lot of
he came in the last 3 minutes when
and it's AU time. Yeah.
No
and
question.
So now all of a sudden he's going to the staff meeting the next day. Hey man, my guy's playing great. Coach, I talked to his people. He should be getting a few more minutes. It's like, whoa, hang on now. You know, that's like in the guts of the game, what's he doing versus AU time? I'm so glad you said that, man. Golly, we could do a whole pod on plus minus alone.
Alan, but, I don't think you said a single thing here that I disagree with. I think every single thing you said is spot on from my point of view. And you talk about AAU time. We call it garbage time. We actually have a mathematical formula to say, when does regular basketball stop being played? It's either when we start fouling each other because one team's trying to come back. So it's not basketball. It's who can make free throws, foul, go to the free throw line.
Yeah.
Or it's and we're up 20 with 2 minutes to go and we empty the benches and we just play.
Mathematically impossible.
In all of our analysis, including the player leverage stuff I talked about earlier, we're excluding garbage time because all that's going to do is add noise to what you're trying to measure. So
yeah.
I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you said that.
That's definitely interesting to think about. Just because, like, to your point, if you really look at the full glimpse of it all, and correct me if I'm wrong, but say a kid checks in for a couple minutes, you're trying to give him a couple minutes here and there sporadically. Maybe he's your, I don't know, eighth, ninth man, and you only typically play seven. I know that's a short leash, short bench there, but just going off of something here. So, like, that eighth guy, if he checks in and somebody else gets beat back door two possessions in a row and then the point guard turns it over twice, that's basically cutting into his plus minus, even though he had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Sure.
Yeah, and so what you're getting to there, Doug, a little indirectly, though, is the problem of sample size, because you're specifically saying this guy doesn't play many minutes. The smaller the number of minutes, the more random stuff like that are going to impact the numbers you look at on the stat sheet after the game. So another thing we do with, because I've seen the box scores you guys get on the bench, next to plus minus, it doesn't say statistical significance or confidence interval. Like, it just gives you the number. So one thing we do on our end is we look at sample size. And so this is actually a good time to talk about this, because we're a little over halfway through this basketball season right now. Mm-hmm. And we have enough data on teams and players to say, hey, this guy's played, I don't know, 700-800 possessions. Things like his teammate giving up an open back door, that stuff's going to even out over the course of 800 possessions. Over the course of 8 possessions or even 80 possessions, a few things like that randomly are enough to skew the numbers. So sample size is another big thing that we analytics data nerd types preach to coaches, is don't make decisions based on data from one game, even data from 4 or 5 games. You want to have, and they're waiting, I haven't even mentioned my partner yet. It's probably a good time to do this. The D in HDI is Matt Dover. That's my co-founder and co-partner. And Matt's, I like math. I understand the numbers. Matt's light years ahead of me on this. He's a master's degree from Harvard, data science, builds predictive models. And we have a whole team that works with Matt now, but he's really a huge part of what we do. And he understands things like what is statistically significant. And to put that in coaching terms, can I trust this number or can I not trust this number? And hopefully you earn coaches' trust over time to the point where when you tell them something like that, they believe you, right? They've had positive experiences with you. They've been working with you long enough. And when you tell them, hey, coach, I know for 3 games in, the numbers look bad on this kid, but let's not make any rash decision because it's still a pretty small sample size. Or this guy's playing great. Maybe I should be starting him. Maybe, but we'll feel a lot more confident about that after 10 games, coach. Right now, it's still a small sample size.
Yeah. No, that's a great thing to factor in, that impactful.
No, it really is. Now, I guess off of that, kind of sparked in my head early on, but I wanted to wait maybe until after we dove a little bit more in depth on it. But we've been talking about actual games, you get the stat sheets, all of that. If we flip that into more of a practice to be able to help utilize the analytics that you get from games to alter it into how can we work on those and make it better in practice, what are some ways, say you were a head coach tomorrow and you just had a couple games, you see the analytics, the numbers. What are some ways that you can use those specific numbers, whatever they may be, to alter your practices, to make them more efficient, to work on what you have been struggling at?
Yeah, really good question. I love the practicality of, hey, coaches got to go to practice every day. How is this actually going to help me every single day when I'm planning that out? Then you got to start with what Coach Major said before, which is, what's your identity? Do you know who you are? Because if you do, you're going to get more out of the analytics than if you don't. So you start there, right? We want to be a team. We're a man-to-man team, right? We take pride in protecting the rim. We'll close out the shooters, but our priority is on defending the rim, not fouling, contesting jumps, jumpers, rebounding. And offensively, we want to do A, B, and C, right? You have a clear idea of who you are. Then I think the way analytics can help you in practice is you look at the games you've played, game to game, or we can create a report that covers all your games, right? Or your last 5 games. But think of that report as almost like an autopsy. And what you're going to reveal in there is, have we been playing the way we want to play? We say we want to do A, B, and C. The numbers don't lie. If you have good numbers, the numbers don't lie. Have we actually been doing that? Yes, we've been doing a good job at this. We've been doing a good job at contesting shots. We've been doing a good job at protecting the paint, but we're not rebounding well. Like, our standard goal for rebounding is here, and we're giving up offensive rebound rate that's here. As a coach now, that tells me very clearly what's our problem area on defense. Now, maybe I picked a bad example because in my experience, rebounding is a tough problem to fix. A lot of times that can be more personnel than scheme, but to the extent you can identify that problem and then work in practice to fix it, just gives you a clear idea of what needs to get worked on. I would say the other thing, Doug, is because that's more thinking about your team. A big portion of practice is preparing for the upcoming games too, right? Opponent scouting. So analytics can be really helpful there as well. Again, whether you're doing it on your own or using HDI and we're providing you, like Coach Major sees with these analytic scouting reports for a particular game, hopefully the analytics can give you a clearer picture of the team you're about to play and a clearer picture of each player. As you're devoting part of your practice to game prep, you can tell your players more precisely, here's what they want to do. Hey, this guy comes in, he's the seventh man. He's going to play less than 20 minutes. But guys, he has the highest three-point attempt rate on the team. Yes. And in transition, it's like through the roof. So if we do not close out to him in transition, we have to take his space away. He cannot even get a look at the basket. Your analytics hopefully give you more just really precise details like that to help in your preparation.
Yeah. No, love that, man. It's so true. And I'll be honest with you, I read the stuff that our guy Beckett sends to us. And shout out to Beckett Sanderson, our HDI guy here in San Diego. But I only understand probably about 60% of all the numbers. I'd have to really have somebody sit down and take me through every single. But I understand enough that what you just said, I can pull it back to when we watch film with our guys. And we say, hey, when this guy checks in, 75% of his shots are threes, right? So the numbers tell you the story. And then that story helps you prepare the guys. So that's what I really enjoy about it. Again, it's that. And then when you watch it yourself, you can see how is he getting them. Because the numbers will tell you if he's getting them and that he's getting them. But then you could say, you said transition, or is it coming off staggers? Do they run him around, or is he a standstill guy? So there's different ways that he's impacting the game with that shot. And then the film and your eyes tell you how that's going on. So again, it's like we were talking about earlier, it's the information and then the confirmation. And then the eyes are I know I'm going a lot of shuns here, but the verification, it's kind of like your eyes, trusting your eyes as well.
I think it worked. I think that's the process that often happens, and there's a lot of value in that. Helps coaches. I just want to make one point based off what you were saying there. I had a thought, like,
yeah, please.
The more data you have, the more the data can not only tell you what, but how. At the college level, we have a little bit of that, right? Like you talked about, is a guy a standstill shooter or not? Like we know from the data we have access to how often a player's, let's say it's a 3-point shot, comes off an assist or not, which obviously tells you, can he shoot off the bounce, create his own, or is he more of a catch and shoot standstill guy? It's very important for scouting. So it's good to know, especially if you didn't have that and all you knew was he takes a lot of threes. But there's a whole another level to data that, frankly, the college game, maybe individual programs here and there, they track it or they partner with some vendor that's cutting edge that gives it to them. But the vast majority of colleges don't have access to that. It's not tracked by cameras or the statistician there at the scores table, but you look at the NBA and they have for a long time, these cameras, and these cameras are awesome now, and they track more stuff than you would even believe. But what ends up happening from a data side is, and just from the data, if he's coming off staggers, right? If he's a catch and shoot guy, if he likes to step to his left off a shot fake, or if he steps to his right off a shot fake, it's super granular. And I think that's where this thing is trending. As college coaches or small college or high school coaches, I think you look up a level, and particularly thinking about the NBA and what they have access to from data standpoint. And I believe, and I hope it happens sooner than later, that that level of data will eventually work its way down to the lower levels, because it's a lot of data to sort through, and you need people and you need analytics people to figure out what it's, but at the end of the day, if you can decipher what it's telling you, it can be really valuable and it can save you a lot of time, just to be frank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
A lot of headaches, a lot of what's going on, what are we missing? The amount of times coaches have those. Now, I honestly, like I said, for a small school that we are, where I'm at Chatham in Pittsburgh, we use analytics to a nice extent. We don't have as much as the NBA may have where they can tell all of that, but we have this person likes catch and shoot from the corner. He likes to rip through, go with his right hand. Little things like that tell you so much without even having to go above and beyond. It tells you enough to be able to at least give a full synopsis of that scout for that next team. So that's some great stuff for sharing. And thank you for all that. That is great.
Oh man. Love it.
Is there anything, let me ask, is there anything that maybe we missed? I don't even know. We talked about games. We talked about efficient practices. We talked about that scouting report. Is there anything that maybe you have seen or discussed before that maybe we have missed?
Yeah, the one thing that comes to mind is, and probably affecting all levels of basketball, but by the way, Doug, we work with some D2 and D3 teams, and we'd love to have that conversation. If you guys are into that, I mean, there's some precedent there. We'd love to grow our presence there, but most of our clients are D1, and so I know this is a huge deal at the D1 level, and that's roster building, transfer portal, player acquisition, to some extent, like resource allocation in the rev share era. Analytics are massively important, I think influential and helpful in that space. These days, being a college coach, probably trending more, and Alan, you could tell us in your seat, but what percent is game planning and player development and running practice, and what percent of your time and energy goes to roster construction and recruiting and figuring out your NIL rev share? I think it's increasingly more that latter piece takes up a lot of your time. And so there's a lot of data that's out there. It's a lot of data we can help with, whether it's evaluating a potential transfer, how to use analytics to compare this high major D1 kid that didn't play very much maybe and was a backup to this low major kid who played a ton. His stats look great, but team wasn't very good. Like, how do you compare those? That's kind of apples and oranges, right? Analytically, there are ways to get that closer to a one-to-one comparison. Resource allocation, similar thing. I know that's more of a new thing, but it's a reality, right? Our budget, and whether that's rev share, NIL, or however, I think it's really important. Obviously, in professional sports, with salary caps and whatnot, this has been part of the game for a long time. And at that level, a lot of your analytics people are just focused on that. And I think college coaches right now are realizing that, oh yeah, the numbers and diving into the numbers is really good for dissecting my own team and helping me plan practice and preparing. But I probably need to start thinking along those terms too when it comes to the roster building part of things. So that would be the other area that we didn't discuss, Doug, that I want to highlight there.
Yeah, it's great that you mentioned that, Colton. I think that, in addition to what we mentioned earlier about knowing who you are, I think when the season ends, obviously, as the season goes on and when it begins, you want to know who exactly you are. And maybe it's harder to build a program right now from a cycles perspective, but you still have to really clarify your culture. And then who you bring in is going to be reflected by whatever type of culture you set. So now whoever you bring in has got to be reflected in your portal background information.
Yes.
So if that should be the lenses by which you work your way through the portal, is this guy one of us?
Right.
Culturally, number one, is he one of us? But then basketball-wise, does he fit what we're doing? And if you can get this, you can get seduced by wanting a data model in this transfer portal deal versus, like, sometimes the girl next door with the ball cap and the ponytail, she's okay. She's okay. Don't get it twisted. She's fine. Like, you can want a data model, and that's great, but be prepared because models might come with some maintenance.
Hey, I'm gonna confess something here. When you said data model, I thought you were saying data and then model as in predict, because that's how my mind is wired.
Oh, I was saying
DATA model, and I finally, I know what you mean.
DATEA in the middle. Yeah, that's right. DATEA in the middle. Yeah, DATA model. We got to be careful as coaches, but I think when the season ends, if you have a clear-cut identity, no matter how your season went, if you know who you are as a program, I think that helps you also navigate the portal, because now who you bring in should be reflected on what you're trying to be. And so then you can use the information and everything we're talking about to your advantage. And now that's when, to me, the money ball thing kicks in is portal time and understanding who you are. The Oakland A's had an identity of what they were trying to be. That's the whole point behind that book. And they said, you know what? We're going to go with the catcher that was at Mississippi State for 3 years and threw out base runners at this rate. And the pitchers that he works with tend to have success, or whatever the data was telling them. So I think that's as big a deal as anything. You got to know who you are at the end of the season, especially as much as you need to know who you are during the season.
Yeah, and it's both and, right? It's like when we talk about building your program and analytics being a part of that, right? Your culture, right? And your values and your athletic training and your strength coach. Like, there's all these pieces you need, your nutrition. Like, we can name 10 other things that go into putting a successful program together, and not one of them is the magic pill, to go back to that, right? but all of them help. And I think when you're evaluating players in terms of, and you don't say, well, either or, either we get a high character player or a good 3-point shooters. You want to check both boxes. It's both and, right? So again, data analytics is not going to be the magic bullet. The only thing you look at, and you just look at the HDI rating and the player efficiency, and you just get the highest guys you can. That might not be the best fit for your program. That's not going to account necessarily for, is this guy a good teammate or is he a jerk?
There you go.
And with our culture here, that stuff really does matter. So to me, it's a both and. The data piece of that can be really helpful in the player evaluation part. And then any good coach is going to also make some phone calls and figure out, okay, what type of player am I getting here just on a character piece? Because even though I love data analytics, we have a whole business around it. You'll never hear me say like that other side doesn't matter. It does. Mm-hmm. But I think it's no both doubt. And, right?
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying data model versus dating a model. Now the people listening know exactly where we were coming from.
It was so funny because when you said everybody wants the data model, I was like, oh, they do. That's good for us. We have a lot of data models. We can provide. But then I kept listening to you and you said data model. So that's also true. Yeah.
Right.
All right, but it's different.
Miles apart. Yeah, no question.
Yeah, no question.
Well, Colton, as I said, thank you very much. I know you have been a very big help for I'm sure plenty of programs. I know we have mutual connections you work with, and they say great things, obviously, USD, San Diego over there with them. But just thank you for being able to be on here and share all this information with us, because analytics, as we had mentioned, is one of those things that not only has it grown, but it is one of those that a lot of coaches look and potentially even depending on your personnel and who you are, you rely on tremendously. And it's a huge thing for athletics and for basketball and for just everybody to be able to utilize. So thank you for being able to be on here and give people more in-depth details as to what a lot of this contains. So thank you for sharing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so good, you're welcome. Man. It was a pleasure to be here. I love talking ball. And I told you guys this off air, but I'll say it now as we wrap up. I'm a big fan of Rising Coaches from way back to the very beginning and have had a good relationship with this organization for a long time. And I just really admire all the good you're doing, the way you help grow the game and develop. Provide resources for, up and coming coaches. I think it's awesome. So pleasure to be here.
No, thank you, man. This was awesome.
Thank you. No, and for everybody out there, all of you coaches, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, all you coaches, keep working, keep rising.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.